All right. Welcome, everyone. Thank you all for tuning in to this episode of The Sports Shop. My name is Kayvon Izami. I am your host. For this episode, we are honored and delighted to have on former NBA scout Brian Oringer here. Brian has worked for the Washington Wizards, Atlanta Hawks, and Miami Heat, and has been along around with the NBA and basketball for a long time. So, Brian, thank you so much for coming on, man. How are you doing today?
I'm good, Kayvon. How are you?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Hanging in there during this tough time right now, you know?
It's wild. I'm losing it without being able to play pickup.
Yeah, man. It's been tough. But Brian, before we get started here, I do want to tell the listeners what you're doing now. I'm a big fan of your work. I've been following it for a good while now, and I just think, you know, you can explain it and explain to them how we can also find some of it too, and the best way to locate some of that work that you do.
Yeah, so kind of like you said, I spent 7 years working in the NBA. I was the head video coordinator and traveled with the Washington Wizards for 4 seasons, and then did regional advanced scouting for the Hawks and Raptors for 1 season. And after that, I kind of realized the industry was obviously very unstable, with coaches getting fired left and right. Dwayne Casey got fired after actually winning coach of the year when I worked for Toronto. So tried to kind of carve my own path a little bit, and I started kind of my own media brand, Scout with Brian. And yeah, ever since then, I've been putting out a lot of really in-depth film studies on YouTube, Scout with Brian podcast, obviously a pretty big presence on Twitter. And I just try to, provide a pretty unique perspective, a perspective of somebody who, you know, really understands the X's and O's, how coaches think, how players think, less of the clickbait, hot take nonsense that I think is pretty prevalent in media today. And yeah, like you said, just any platform, basically, if you type in Scout with Brian with a Y, you'll find my stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And once again, that's Scout with Brian with a Y. And what really got me hooked on some of the stuff you do, man, is the way you, and you alluded to it right here, the way you break down game film, it's exactly like they do it, you know, in the actual NBA. And so it's really cool to be able to see how, okay, you know, this is kind of, coaches are doing this, players are doing this in their own arena, and you give us in-depth. And I would tell anyone out there, even if you're just beginning to learn basketball and you love the sport, he still posts a lot of awesome stuff to get you, you know, even if you're new to it, to understand how the game works, and then obviously more advanced as well. So definitely check that out, Scout with Brian with a B-R-Y-A-N. Give it a look. But Brian, I do want to jump in here because I appreciate you giving us some time, and I want to get into what is going on with the NBA today. Obviously, as everyone knows, the NBA is shut down at the moment due to COVID-19. My question for you, Brian, and I preface this by saying, obviously, I know you're not a World Health official or anything like that, but you have worked for a couple different NBA organizations. You understand the logistics of what goes into putting on an NBA game. So with that in mind, with your knowledge and all that, do you see this season being finished? And if so, in what way do you see that happening?
Man, I gotta be honest with you. I really have no clue.
Okay.
I mean, I can kind of, you know, I certainly touch on what putting on a game is like, but I feel like, you know, putting on a game is obviously gonna look nothing like any game has ever been put on before.
Of course.
I'll tell you, I've talked to like a high ranking front office person recently who just literally told me he has no idea what's going on or what the plan is. So yeah, I'm not even sure the NBA really knows. I mean, I personally, you know, just my hunch is expecting that it will at least come back for the playoffs at the very least. I don't know the exact way that they'll do that. I would definitely, or almost definitely, bet that there won't be any fans.
Yeah.
I don't know if, you know, the single city type thing is feasible at all. But yeah, whatever it is, it's going to look very different. And yeah, again, I like you said, I'm not a health expert.
Yeah.
I've had some controversial COVID opinions, but, you know, I do think that, you know, if you can find a way to do it safely and to kind of quarantine players as best you can, you know, they are all very healthy young guys, and, you know, a few, you know, a lot of them did test positive in the first place. And, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, it's consistent with the way most young people are responding to the virus, and that, you know, it feels like a tough cold flu, whatever, but you make it out the other end. So, you know, I think we just still have to keep that perspective and remember, you know, even if one more player, two more players, when we come back, test positive, I don't think that's like the end of it right away. You know,
yeah.
I think now that we know a little bit more about how it spreads and such, we can, you know, quarantine those people appropriately and hopefully get back to some semblance of normalcy. But again, this is very unprecedented, and I'm really just guessing about what's going to happen.
Of course, yeah, and I mean, I, like you said, I think the NBA is too. I mean, it's day by day. It's such a fluid situation. But then, like you said, you know, if it does come back, the idea of fans is so small that most likely won't happen. So, you know, LeBron said it a couple times how he would hate to play without fans, and he got some criticism, which I think was a little much. I think what he was just saying is, I mean, the kid has been, since 15 years old, he's been playing in front of a sold-out crowd, you know. So it's these NBA players, they play in front of fans. It's emotional. It gets them going. It motivates them when you go on the road and win a playoff game. So just, you know, looking at it big picture, if it does come back and there are no fans in the game, could you see that, you know, just with your basketball knowledge, like affecting some of these top tier teams like the Lakers, the Clippers, or Bucks, or so on? Or because you know, the NBA, usually it's you win the first couple rounds pretty easily, you have the best players, you win, you sweep, or gentlemen sweep, stuff like that. Do you see that affecting any of these teams if the games do come back?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely could, especially because, you know, the main thing not having any fans is going to take away, really, is that home court advantage. You know, that's usually a huge factor in the playoffs. It's really, really hard to steal games on the road. But, you know, if you basically now look at it as, even if you're playing, you know, in those arenas, if they're completely empty and you have, you know, like LeBron said, no fans at your back, you know, I think that definitely does change the mental dynamic to it. And LeBron, I think, even came out and, you know, kind of apologized and said, I think, you know, he sort of spoke out before he really realized how bad, you know, COVID was and the implications of it. But, you know, the guys will make the most of it. And I think the mentally tough teams obviously can still find a way to do their job even without kind of that home court advantage. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely think some of those, you know, 2-7, 3-6 type series could be a lot more interesting, you know, with home court becoming a lot less of a thing if that's how it works out.
Yeah, I hate to put you on the spot here, but before this all happened, who did you have winning the title this year going into the playoffs when they were about to happen and everything?
I personally have been high on an LA team all season, whether it be Lakers or Clippers. Yeah. I've always kind of thought that was going to be the Western Conference Finals in the end, and that, you know, whoever won that would likely win the title. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Houston, I think, would have been certainly in the running. I think Utah was starting to put it together. You know, Milwaukee, I think, is most likely to come out of the East. But, you know, there's certainly a couple teams that could challenge them potentially. But, yeah, I'd say smart money, I think, would still be on a LA team to pull it out.
Yeah, and that would have been an awesome West Finals to have. I would have put money on it going at pretty far, 6 or 7 games, and would have been really, really fun. So get into something here that you have a big part in. You know, you did a lot of scouting with these teams. You still do. I see you put a lot of player profiles up and in-depth videos and stuff like that. And, you know, the NFL draft is tomorrow, and it just had me thinking, all the major sports drafts, they're interesting to me because it's such an inexact science. I mean, you have so many GMs whiff on players all the time, hit on players they didn't think that would actually be a stud, and they come out to be. I mean, Giannis goes 15th overall or something like that, and he, you know, he's amazing. So just in terms of when, you know, when you were scouting prospects, when you do scout prospects, whether it's college level, international level, whatever, do you look at that player based on how he will fit in with a team? Or is it just, okay, this player has so much skill, we can't pass on for him? And for instance, like Luka, you know, you see Luka now, and it's like, how did he drop down to where he is, and how did he not go 1 overall? And is that something more because GMs didn't think that they needed a player like that, or they just didn't realize he was going to be as good as he is?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, you know, it's a very inexact science. I think, you know, it really always kind of depends on the team and, you know, what situation you're in terms of, you know, are you rebuilding? Are you already a contender? Are you, you know, how close are you to the playoffs? Things like that. I mean, there's a million factors at play. You know, looking back, you see a team like Sacramento. I mean, you know, with Fox and Buddy, you know, the guard play that they have. I mean, it would have been a little hard for them to justify taking another, you know, another guard like in their situation. But certainly, I think looking back, they would have at least, you know, maybe traded down and got some more assets out of it. But yeah, I mean, drafting as a whole, like you said, I mean, I think so much of it is ends up being how motivated a player is actually by where he goes in the draft. Yeah. You know, so that's why you mentioned Giannis, Kawhi, Paul George. I think we're all kind of in that 10 to 15 range. Jokic, Draymond Green was a second round pick, both of them. Isaiah Thomas was the last pick in the draft. You know, and you see, like, Draymond was a phenomenal college player, but he was always kind of a little chubby, a little like, you know, how is this big plotting guy going to fit in the NBA? But he saw 35 or whatever teams pass on him and became, obviously, you know, fit in a great culture in Golden State and got himself in phenomenal shape. And now he's a, you know, all-star type player. Same with Jokic. You know, he was a big, you know, he's always pretty chubby. But he was like morbidly obese when Denver picked him. And now he's, you know, in good enough shape to be a superstar. So, yeah, it's very tough to do, and I, you know, that's why I always will tell people, and even when I make my predictions, you know, that it's very dependent on what they do every single day. Meaning, like, you know, for example, I thought DeAndre Hunter was picked too high, and I still think, you know, he probably wasn't worth the fourth pick, and I, you know, I'm lower on him than most. But if he, you know, if he ends up having the best work ethic in the draft and just has a relentless, you know, killer mentality and doesn't stop improving, you know, he could be a superstar. Who knows? You know, that's, I think, the hardest part, too, is we can watch tape. You can kind of get some feel for what kind of person they are. But I think that work component and you know, the intangible part is a huge, huge factor. And it's really, really hard to quantify.
Yeah, I think that you make an awesome point about the motivation factor. I mean, you alluded to Draymond, and he's been on record many times counting every single person that was drafted ahead of him. That's real, and I find that a very interesting point and a proven point, really, that how they put in the work after it, and it's not just, okay, I got drafted number 4 overall, I got a big payday from that, let's see how it goes from here. In terms of, you know, some of the young superstars right now in the NBA, I do think, you know, the league is in good hands. You have guys like Luka and Trae Young and Jason Tatum. You know, this year they haven't had a full season, but Ja Morant and obviously Zion Williamson. You know, out of those guys, do you have a couple that you look at saying, I mean, this guy could be the face of the league? When you look at a couple of those names I named, or maybe some that I left out, anyone that really sticks out to you that's been really impressive so far, and you see taking their game to the next level as they go forward here?
Yeah, I mean, I think all those guys are, you know, already stars and certainly have superstar potential. I think Zion and Ja have a chance to be, you know, the best two players out of any draft class for a long, long time, and I kind of like, you know, Luka and Trey, to be honest. I think that's, you know, they're all incredible players that I think could be MVP types someday for sure. You know, in terms of guys you didn't mention, I mean, he's kind of, you know, obviously more well-known now and an all-star this season, but Siakam's a guy in Toronto that I always, you know, have been absurdly high on, and people thought I was crazy when, you know, I mentioned his kind of trajectory being similar to Giannis, and, you know, people point out they're the same age, but Siakam started playing a lot later. You know, his growth from season to season has been absolutely absurd, you know, adding the three ball, adding mid-range, just going from a guy that was basically a hustle player to super, super skilled and able to make shots from everywhere. I think he has MVP-type potential. Looking around the rest of the league, you know, I like from this last year's class, I was really high on Rui Hachimura. You know, Jarrett Culver in Minnesota, I think, has a chance to be really good. So, yeah, it's certainly a really good time for the youth in the league. And I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, could certainly be all-stars for a long time.
Yeah, and then what gets you out of here on this note? Once again, really appreciate you doing this. Just, you know, where this whole lot of talk, the Last Dance came out. I know you watched it. I read your take on it. I thought it was really, really, really proven point what you said. I thought it was well detailed and everything. And once again, you guys can all check that out if you just scout with Brian, B-R-Y-A-N. And just, you know, in terms of the whole GOAT debate, and I know this is kind of a hot take thing that a lot of people will talk about, and I get it, it's very hard to compare eras, but, you know, do you believe that Jordan is untouchable in that conversation, and is LeBron near him, or is he even second in your list, and what do you look for? I mean, I know ESPN did this interesting article where they named what they really look for in a GOAT, in the best player ever, and Jordan was ruthless, he was a great scorer. LeBron has a little bit more of those assist, rebounding numbers ahead of him. So what do you see when it comes to that whole conversation?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I used to be one of those people that did believe Jordan would never be touched. And honestly, I grew up kind of despising LeBron as a Wizards fan growing up when he had those you know, Cleveland series against Deshaun Stevenson and that whole little rivalry we had with them. But yeah, actually now, I'll tell you, I do believe LeBron, at least for me, is the greatest of all time. And, you know, I think that became solidified for me just when he, you know, won a championship in Cleveland with, you know, a very mediocre supporting cast to will that team almost, you know, with very little help over Golden State was unbelievable. I think he'll end up winning another title, maybe multiple titles in LA, and you know, you just look at the longevity of it, the fact that he's going to end up doing it for 20 years, maybe more, is just absurd. And yeah, I think MJ for sure is the most dominant player of all time. I mean, LeBron certainly, you know, is not as good of a scorer, just shot maker, tough shot maker, mid-range shots. You know, MJ will always be, I think, the greatest at that. With Kobe, you know, probably is the closest comparison to him. But, you know, MJ did retire twice in his prime and did miss, you know, a lot of years of basketball. And, yeah, I mean, to me, I think you could certainly always flip a coin between the two of them. I have no problem with either of them, you know, ranking as the GOAT. And like you said, you know, it's obviously a lot of different opinions. But, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I would be shocked if there's ever anybody to play at the level of sustained greatness that LeBron has for so long. You know, and despite, you know, he's had so many doubters and so many, you know, people trying to poke holes in his game. And like I said, I think when he was young, he did have a lot of holes in his game, but he really, really worked on them. His basketball IQ is outrageous, you know, like you hinted at, you know, obviously much, much better passer than Jordan. The fact that he's able to, in this season, you know, 10.6 assists per game is obscene, you know, and just points to just his floor vision and how you could run a whole team through him. So, yeah, I mean, his longevity does it for me. But personally, my list is LeBron, MJ, Kobe. That's my top three. But, you know, if you have something similar to that or a few other guys in that mix, I definitely understand it, but especially if LeBron wins another ring or two in LA, I think it'd be really hard to keep, you know, really arguing against him.
Yeah, I agree. I have LeBron as the best ever. What he did in that Cleveland series, I mean, what he did in 2 years before that when Kyrie got hurt and he even somehow took that six games was remarkable. Those first couple years in Cleveland, man, when he was winning 60 games, it felt like every single year, and he had barely anyone, but Mo Williams was like his second best player on the team. I just think what LeBron has done with, you know, not as great management, not as great players around him, it's been very, very remarkable, and I'm excited to see him do it for many, many more years, hopefully. Brian, it's been awesome having you on here. Like I said, I really do appreciate you taking the time to talk about some of this stuff. I was telling a lot of people about you and some of the things you do, so I know they were looking forward to it. And, you know, stay healthy, stay safe out there, man. And everyone, once again, you can check out his stuff, Scout with Brian, and you just look that up and you'll be able to find stuff. So really appreciate taking the time, Brian.
Thanks again, Kayvon. I enjoyed the chat. Yeah, stay safe, and hopefully we'll get some basketball back soon. Appreciate you having me.
For sure. Have a good one, man. Bye.